This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana, originating from the Investar Tower in Baton Rouge. Robin Dow producing on Veterans Day, and we salute all the people who've served our country in uniform then and now. And Michael Baychok is in the House, political consultant, and among other candidates, he handles Mayor President Sharon Weston Broome, and he and his partner Trey Orso work a lot of campaigns across the country, so we will get Michael's take not only on what happened November 5th in Baton Rouge, but what happened November 5th nationally as Donald John Trump is poised to be the next president. Unless Joe Biden resigns, Trump will be 45 and 47. It would be kind of fun, though, if he suddenly became 45 and 48 and Kamala Harris got to be president for a few months, but that's unlikely to happen. But at any rate, we always enjoy hearing from the most enlightened audience in radio, and your number is 877-217-5757. Emails to talk at talklouisiana.org. Let's start close to home. There is a race December 7th, so according to my math, that's 26 days away, 3 weeks from this coming Saturday. The election will feature Mayor Broome, who's also been forced into runoffs twice before. She got 32% of the votes when she ran the first time in a crowded field and won 52-48 over Bodie White. And then last time, 2020, she received 48% of the votes in the primary and beat Steve Carter 57-43. She is the heavy favorite to win this election, but as we know, incumbents often have issues. People get upset about things that happen over the course of 8 years. But she does also have the luxury of knowing that most of the people who will vote on December 7th likely have voted for her twice. Anyway, on November 5th, it was Sid Edwards, the newcomer, a Republican at 34%, Sharon Weston Broome, 31%, and Ted James at 28%. So Ted James, who many thought was on his way, and I think Ted James thought he was going to make a runoff, missed it by a fairly substantial amount. Over 5,000 votes separated Broome and James. But Michael Baychok, I guess based on historical trends, and Baton Rouge has not elected a Republican mayor since 2000, you've got to be relatively confident about where you are right now.
Well, Jim, thank you for having me on this morning. Relative confidence in today's political world is a oxymoron, maybe. I'm not confident about anything in politics. You know, wake up on a Wednesday morning after an election and you think, I don't know what I'm doing anymore. It's very nice to see, though, that the mayor, is in a runoff in a place she's been twice before and has come out victorious. She's never lost an election.
In 36 years.
Correct. I mean, that's, you know, when I would go to bed at night knowing that we were behind, because I think according to all your pollsters that you talked to, you know, in the mayor's race, the mayor was literally behind for, you know, the last few weeks or so. But I would go to sleep and think, well, you know what? I got Mayor Sharon Weston Broome and she's never lost an election.
And she was tenacious. And, you know, some people basically dial it in when they think they're going down for the count. And there were people, of course, telling her that the odds weren't great, but she hung in there and she won. The day she came and sat in our studio, she'd already made the rounds at Pollard Estates. And I told her, I don't know if people like it when the mayor's knocking on their door at 7 in the morning, but she did it. And enough people responded that she is in a runoff. Now, Sid Edwards, I'll say this, I've mentioned, and it's no secret, it's been, and you probably mentioned it a time or two along the way, he didn't vote for 8.5 years, but that guy has very good candidate skills. He is not to be discounted, and he got 34% of the votes.
Well, he's a very successful football coach, so they have to have organizing skills, and they have to have communication skills with their to reach their players. And so I think that has translated kind of, you know, well into the campaign. But you have to question at some point, you know, why didn't he vote, you know? And I think that's something that he has explained, and he'll have to do some more explaining about that. I'll say one other thing about the mayor, just because I'm very proud of her, and she worked extremely hard in this election. You know, she took nothing for granted. she, as you said, she knocked on doors, she made phone calls, she was everywhere she needed to be, where we asked her to be, and she had to be because, you know, one of our, Ted James, was also a very tenacious, active, effective campaigner. So he, mm-hmm. she was facing a really formidable opponent who had a lot to offer voters in Baton Rouge.
877-217-5757. Kathleen in Goodwood asks about the friction between James and Broome. It was apparent. They used to be, of course, very close. And are they going to be able to patch it up? Will there be an endorsement for Ted James for the mayor, his fellow Democrat?
Well, I know that they've spoken a couple of occasions. And, you know, we're only 6 days removed from the election. So I think people need some time to figure out what their next moves are and what the right thing is to do. And I'm very confident that Ted, whatever decision he makes, you know, will be right for him. And mm-hmm. I also I'm hopeful that it'll be right for Baton Rouge.
And a listener also asked about the commercial that ran with the tape, surreptitiously received, with Ted James making some comments that probably hurt him. But at the time, there was as much publicity over whether the tape should have been played. But my reaction when it was played is that Mayor Broome, based on the fact that she's got two of the best political consultants in the business, and Michael Baychuk and Trey Orsa, you don't do that if you're in front. You knew you were in trouble, didn't you?
Well, I already let on, you know, that, I mean, we weren't polling, but, you know, sometimes you hear things and you see things from other folks, and you talk to pollsters on occasion, I think. Mm-hmm. Sometimes
they're wrong, though.
Yeah, sometimes they're wrong, you know. And
as we found out.
I don't know whether they were wrong or, but I think at the time the strategy dictated for us to show some contrast between Sharon Weston Broome and Ted James, and that was our best angle, and that's what we did.
877-217-5757. Lots of emails, and if you'd like to make your voice heard, we welcome your input. And Michael Baychuk, of course, will be handling Sharon Weston Broome, and we certainly would love to have not only the mayor back, but Sid Edwards back on this show, and he's got some veteran politicos in his corner, and it is fun to watch these guys in their 70s who have some pep in their step that they think they got a shot. In Woody Jenkins, who will be 78 on January 3rd, and Daryl Glasper, who just turned 71. They're all revved up about this, and they've been in a battle or two along the way.
Well, I've been in some of those battles against them. I'm trying to think, you know, it's been, golly, I've been against Woody Jenkins for 30 years, you know, and in fact, Daryl Glasper was a client of mine way back in the day running against for state representative. So, you know, we've all been in the game.
You handled the race against Joe Delpit?
I did. I wasn't going to mention that. It was one of my biggest career regrets. And not because of Daryl, but, you know, I was a young kid trying to just make a living, take any race I could. And I'm glad we lost that one.
Well,
glad Joe Delpit was reelected.
Well, Daryl's told me stories about it, and I think he even had misgivings about running because, you know, Joe Delpit's a legend, and Daryl, of course, was appreciative of that fact. And if you remember, Daryl was expected to win. Joe was under indictment, I believe, and Daryl just went away.
Yeah,
went away the last few weeks, and he still almost won.
I blame that on George Kennedy. George, I think, talked me into doing that. Really? Of course, yeah, and I think George and Daryl were tight, and George didn't really have any connection to the old Baton Rouge political scene. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, George and I just went up against each other. He handled Ted James.
Yeah, and George is still around. George is now 69. We're all getting a little older, and Michael has to be one of the youngest-looking 61-year-olds on the planet. And I think when you were like 13, you were running, helping run, and probably very active in the campaign for one Jerry McKernan, who was going against a guy named Lewis Lambert for public service commission.
That's right. I mean, Jim, I think I might have been 11 or 12 because I think it was 74. Maybe, but Jerry McKernan, who is my father's law partner, ran against Lewis Lambert for public service commission. And it was a, you know, it was a tight, tight, hard fought race. And I think my job, I told you, was put up signs, but in theory, my job was really to take down signs. Mm-hmm. And that race, you know, kind of could have changed the history of Louisiana. Lewis Lambert made a really great career in the next 3 or 4 years as a public service commissioner fighting for consumers. And then he was a breath away from being the governor of Louisiana in 1979. Very, very tight election.
The tightest in our lifetime. Yeah. It was close between Lewis and David Treen. And Lewis was the candidate Treen wanted. He got him, and he still almost lost the race. But Treen ran a good race and had a tough time as governor, had a lot of cards against him, but he is a great man. And we'll be back with another fine man, Michael Baychuk. This is Jim Inkster, and thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Robin Dow is producing, and political consultant Michael Baychuk is in the house, and he knows all the players in Louisiana, both as candidates and as practitioners of politics. I mentioned George Kennedy a few moments ago, but also there's a guy named Jim Kitchens, who's a very good pollster. He was John Bell Edwards' pollster, and he helped Edwards win two elections, and he, along with this young whiz, Bishop George, Vantage House Data in Shreveport, they had a new toy that worked last year in a trial run in Louisiana, and they tried it out nationally, trying to figure out who would win the presidential election, and it was a disaster. And they're paying the price, and Kitchens, who's had a long and distinguished career that goes back more than 40 years, he may not recover from this. Michael Baychuk, it's hard to believe somebody so wise could be so wrong, but when you look at the numbers were probably, you know, 3 to 5% off in most places, which is a lot, but there were only a few really bombs, and that was Florida, where they had Harris neck and neck with Trump, and Trump won in a landslide in Florida, and that one was dead wrong. But the others, as you know, it is possible that there was a late move to Trump, but probably not. Something happened. How could that have occurred?
Well, I'm glad I'm not a pollster in today's political environment. It's just the most difficult job. I don't even know how they get people on the phone to talk to them or get them to respond to text or whatever it is. So I'm not gonna pile on my good friend Jim Kitchens. Some people, you know, if he's wrong, he got it wrong, then he got it wrong. I'm sure he got it right in a lot of spots. I know from following national polling in the places we were working in, specifically Pennsylvania, you know, our polling was fairly spot on for the entire election. We were usually behind. We were way behind with Biden. You know, he was down 4 to 6 points before Kamala got into the race in Pennsylvania. And then the race tightened very much. And I don't think that Vice President Harris ever had a lead larger than one. I think our last poll, which was a week before, was tied or Trump plus one. And so that's how mm-hmm. it kind of turned out, right? I mean, it's within, they talk about margin of error a lot, Jim, and mm-hmm. voters and people kind of disregard that, but it really means something statistically. And so, well, yeah. you know, the race fell within the whatever the margin of error was, 3.5, 4, mm-hmm. whatever, you know? Mm-hmm. And so they can't predict it exactly. Usually you're looking for trends, momentum, and, you know, large margins of, you know, will hold up because they're outside of this margin of error. But I'm not ready to say that our polling industry, pollsters as a whole, got the race wrong, because everybody that I saw, all the polls that I saw, were basically predicting that it was a toss-up.
Well, right now, in the overall vote, and Trump could actually be pushed below 50%, but looks like he's going to finish just above 50, because only 75% of the votes are counted in California, which Harris is winning big. And right now, by the way, I just got an email from a listener saying that that Harris got 15 million fewer votes than Biden. That's not true. Harris is now over 71 million. Biden got 81 million. And she's going to get a couple more million when all is counted. And Trump has now slightly exceeded his 74 million and change of 2020. So when all is said and done, Biden will still have the most votes ever in a presidential election. And Trump will be number two and number three. And Harris will be number four. More people are voting. That's good. But right now, 50.4% for Trump, 48% for Harris, which is about the same margin that Hillary Clinton had over Trump in a losing election in 2016. And if you look at these key states that we talked about over and over, in Pennsylvania, which Michael was doing some work for the Harris campaign, it's a separation of about right now of about 145,000 votes, which is significant. But it's less than a percentage point. Well, actually, let's see, it's a couple of percentage points. But Wisconsin is extremely close, like a hair thin. And Michigan is about 38,000, I believe. So you take those three states, and she could have won the election and lost in the overall vote. And when it happens to the Republicans, I think that's when we'll have a move to get rid of the Electoral College.
Well, you know, we started out this race a year ago, 9 months ago, and the race was three states, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Michigan. And we ended up, if she had won those three states, she'd be the president. And maybe she would have lost the popular vote, but it wouldn't have mattered because she would have won the Electoral College.
That's right.
So, you know, I don't, popular vote, there were some smaller margins in what people are calling, you know, blue states like New Jersey and New York that are going to contribute to
the overall.
Correct. The popular vote.
I think she had smaller margins in every state.
Much smaller.
All 50 states.
Correct.
But in the SEC, Trump won by 8 million votes in the 12 states of the SEC and got 160 of his electoral votes. She won by 3 million. At 5 million in the rest of the country, the other 38 states in the District of Columbia, and beat him in the Electoral College 226 to 152. But that's not how we select presidents. But it shows you the power of the SEC. And a listener last week said, has this ever happened before? We usually, when we do things out of the norm, we do it with people like George Wallace and Strom Thurmond and Barry Goldwater. But Jimmy Carter, I was looking at 76. He carried every SEC state except Oklahoma, which wasn't an SEC state then. So things have changed, and 28 of the states in 1976 have flipped, that Carter and Ford. So the country has evolved politically. How do you explain that, Michael?
Well, I mean, civilizations evolve. That's what they do.
Or devolve.
I was about to say, I'm not sure which direction we've gone. But people also gravitate towards, you know, the people that are like them and think like them. And so they're going to congregate in places where their neighbors, you know, are not opposed to their beliefs and they share beliefs. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what we're seeing. We're definitely seeing, clearly, we've seen a political across the country polarization. And we're definitely seeing a geographical polarization at this point. I do believe, though, Georgia, I made a lot of predictions in politics, most of which have probably been wrong, but I do believe that Georgia is going to break your SEC trend moving forward.
And Trump only won by 2 points in Georgia. And Georgia, of the 12 SEC states, there are obviously 24 U.S. senators. There are 22 Republicans and 2 Democrats, and they're both in Georgia. And now John Ossoff has a shot. You'll probably be involved in that campaign. He would have been dead in the water with Harris as president. That's the way midterms go. But now he has a shot with Trump as president to win another 6 years in office.
It's just funny how, you know, the map for U.S. Senate, which we're involved in this year, was probably about as bad as it could possibly be for Democrats. I think the map and the way things shake out in 2026 are almost pretty, it's about as good as it can be. So, you know, you have a protection state like Georgia and Ossoff, and you're like, oh my goodness, this is going to be so hard. And now you're right. I think it's just totally flipped, and there'll be there'll be opportunities, I believe, just like there were in 2018 for pickups, because if things go the way that they went the first 2 years of the Trump administration, I think voters kind of get a little nervous and they want to see a little bit more balance.
There are rumors, and a listener notes, Tracy at the Capitol, that Kemp will run against Ossoff, and that will be a tough race. But what happens in Louisiana with a closed primary? Tracy asked, can John Bel Edwards be coaxed into the race? He would have a shot.
He would. He would have a shot in an open primary.
He would, but I think in a closed primary, he has a shot that's even better, because if we have runoffs, which we probably will for the nominations of each party, Cassidy's going to be in a runoff, and he's going to be wounded. He's either going to be gone or he's going to be wounded.
Or he won't be in the runoff.
It could be multiple Republicans taking on the man who had the audacity to vote to impeach Donald John Trump. Watch Bill Cassidy now try to make up with a man from Gotham City. Back with James and Metairie. First up with Michael Baychuk after this. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana, another segment with Michael Baychuk, one of the most exceptional political consultants, or so Baychuk. They won national awards, as a listener, Helen Monroe, notes in 2015 when they did the gumbo pack to beat David Bruce Vitter. And they did. John Bel Edwards, as a Democrat, we're just talking 9 years ago, he got 56% of the votes statewide. So that was a job that was well done, but it was against a wounded Republican. So even in Louisiana, the matchup means volumes. And right now, Donald Trump is very popular, and there are some weird things that happen. I don't know how Foster Campbell held on in 2020 when he ran for re-election to the Public Service Commission, and Trump got about 70% of the votes, or 75% in his district, and Campbell, as a Democrat, won.
Well, you know, the interesting thing, Jim, that you look around the country, ticket splitters, and for political science, you know, people, ticket splitters were always like the pot of gold. You got to go find those people that vote Republican for one.
There are fewer of them now.
There were.
But you're
there is a strong resurgence of ticket splitters. You go around.
What you do,
because you look at Nevada.
Trump
won Nevada. Jackie Rosen won Nevada.
But both were close.
But they're out there.
5%. North
Carolina.
The governor, crazy governor.
Right. He won by, I don't know, 8-10 points, and Trump won. So you know, there's a pot right there of 10-12%. So ticket splitters are back.
We won
the Baldwin Senate race in Wisconsin, and we lost
in Arizona.
You know, so
it looks that way, but
which to me, I'm going to just say, sitting here as a 30-year-old political consultant, I don't understand how you vote for Trump and you vote for Ruben Gallego. Arizona,
in Louisiana. Now, mind you, it's been 28 years, but Bill Clinton beat Bob Dole, if I remember right, by 235,000 votes, and Woody Jenkins almost beat Mary Landrieu. It was a 5,788 vote margin, so over 200,000 people. You do the math, it had to be went in and voted for Clinton and Jenkins.
Thank God for those 5,800 and some people. They ought to be given a lifetime achievement
award. I've got my theory on that, because Woody would have run for president in 2020, and he probably would have wounded George Bush a bit more, that Albert Arnold Gore would have gotten another 537 votes in Florida, and he would have been president. So you can blame the loss by Woody Jenkins on George Bush winning over Al Gore. James in Metairie. James, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Hi, Jim. Good morning, and hello to your guests. Two questions, please. Before the election, they said the female gender gap was about 16 points between Trump and Harris. It actually turned out to be 8 points, according to exit polls. Number one, what happened there? And number two, does your guest think that Trump is going to be sentenced in his hush money trial later this month?
Well, on the first question, I don't think that it was ever 16, and I don't rely on exit polls. So I'm going to wait.
I saw some that said 12.
But, yeah, I'll wait to see the real numbers, which they'll be able to determine. But it was certainly smaller than what was estimated, and that was probably the difference.
I
think the gender gap with men was probably a little bit wider.
Black men, 23% voted for Trump, and only 9% of black women voted for Trump. Black men helped.
Is that, so I'm not buying that 23% black men voted for Donald Trump. I'd like to see some numbers. That's an exit poll. Yeah. Exit polls are voodoo.
They are. You don't believe in exit polls?
No.
You don't? Not
for vote totals. I can believe them for, you know, direction and dissatisfaction and favorability. But no, I don't.
Okay.
Straight up no.
All right. Bob Casey in Pennsylvania, who you worked with, if Shapiro had been on the ticket, a listener asks, this is Tom on Bluebonnet, would Casey have been able to win, and would Harris have won Pennsylvania?
Maybe.
You know, maybe.
Maybe. I mean, we probably would have won Pennsylvania, but then what does that do for Casey, you in Michigan and Wisconsin?
I'm saying I don't think that in itself would have made the difference.
Correct.
As Carville said Friday, it wasn't a determinative decision, but I think it did cost Casey a Senate seat.
That was so close that any inertia
one way or the other could matter.
The entire election, Casey was running ahead of the presidential candidate 4 to 5 points. As we got into October, that margin, as it normally does, shrank. And instead of the president following the Senate candidate, the Senate candidate started regressing back to the presidential vote. And that's what ultimately happened, although Casey will outrun Harris.
Got some
and there's still a lot of votes to be counted there, by the way.
Some emails here. It could even swing the other way, but it's sure not looking good for Bob Casey. But let's see. Let's keep it on politics for a few more questions. But Jeff Landry, reported by the New York Post on the short list to be Attorney General for Donald Trump. Is there anything to that? And would he even have a desire to be Attorney General of the United States of America?
Oh, I think so. I mean, I think he would have a desire. You know, and I know, though, that the job of governor of Louisiana is one of the most powerful and best jobs. I mean, you could even get a tiger into the Tiger Stadium.
Well, that's segue to that.
You could do whatever you want to do, and no one's going to say anything. It's a very powerful job. So if you think it up, it can get done. I do think, however, that he would strongly consider taking a job, either that or maybe as in the interior, you know, something oil and gas related. But
well, John Bell Edwards once told me, and I think this was, I'm almost certain this was off the air. Most of the stuff we talked about was on the air, but he said if Joe Biden had called him, that he went to West Point, and if your commander-in-chief asks you to take a position, you almost have to take it, in his view.
Sure. I mean, it's the commander-in-chief.
Patriotic thing. Yeah, you got
to
salute the flag.
To serve your country.
Correct.
Right, absolutely. That's why I think Jeff would probably.
And Jeff's a military guy, too. He's a lot of things. He's a farmer. He's a sheriff. I mean,
former sheriff, deputy sheriff.
Well, anyway, Bill Huey writes, boy, that Florida Tiger sure brought us luck Saturday night. I hope Jeff Landry's tax plan, writes Mr. Huey, meets the same fate when it gets to the Senate. Now, obviously, Bill's not a fan of the governor, but Omar. Omar Bradley, ironically, who is a close friend and confidant to Troy Middleton. They helped win the Battle of the Bulge and the United States victory in World War II. They took Middleton's name off the library. I'm waiting for Landry to put it back on. And I would say, look, if you're going to keep the Boyds and Audubon and others who are Confederates and slave traders, then you got to put Middleton back unless you take them all off, Michael Baychuk. But anyway, your thoughts about Omar in the 42-13 debacle Saturday night.
If you can get a tiger in a Tiger Stadium, you can put a name on a building. I think that's kind of not as heavy as a lift. I'm still a Brian Kelly fan.
You are?
Absolutely. I mean, I trust in Scott Woodward and decisions, well, Scott, and I don't think there's any question. This is one game.
Right.
It's one game.
But Scott, he did a great job in hiring Kim Mulkey. The baseball coach is, John Ferguson would say, top drawer. The gymnastics coach won a national title. He's done a fabulous job hiring coaches, but he'll rise and fall, presumably, with the hiring of Kelly. And Kelly, he had tough acts to follow. Orgeron won a championship in his third season, a national championship. So did Miles. And Saban did it in his fourth season, inheriting a program that had 8 losing seasons in 11 years. So Kelly is 26-10. Let's face it, that's a disappointment at LSU in these times.
Jim, my plate is full with politics. I really don't want to step into another pile of stuff by talking LSU football. I believe in Scott Woodward, and I believe in Brian Kelly, and I think LSU football will be back.
Well, they've got a chance to. They got an opponent that is really reeling in Florida. A good chance for Kelly to get back on the beam, and I think LSU will be favored to win its last three games. But we're in an age now where anything short of a national championship is considered to be unacceptable, and that's tough. That's tough because it is an amazing world now. These players are professionals, and they can come and go as they please. So the whole world has changed. And Kelly is of an age where it may be a little harder for him to adjust than others, but we'll see. He has been a good coach through the years, no doubt about it. And when he was hired, I thought it was a great coup. Hire the coach from Notre Dame, for God's sakes. The guy leaves Notre Dame to come to LSU? That was great. But this Omar thing, my friend Sid in Florida says it's not playing well in other parts of the country.
Well, it's not playing well here in Louisiana, and I love that Jeff Landry's getting all the blame.
Well, President Tate, I'm sure at first he was backing his vets, but then when Jeff Landry gave him a call, his attitude changed a little bit, and he does work for the governor. But they're bigger fights, and a listener notes correctly, I saw the poster, it's in many businesses. There's 17 Golden Girls and not one black Golden Girl at LSU. How can that be with a team that's 85% black in a state that's 33% African-American? How can we not have any African-American Golden Girls, Michael Bachok?
That's shocking to me, Jim. I would not have, I'm a betting man. If somebody would have proposed that bet at a bar, I would have taken a whole lot of action on over and under 4 or 5, something like that.
Do you bet on sporting events?
Every day.
Every day. You said, I want to stay away from sporting, but you're very good at it. And of course, especially on the ponies, it's Chalk's Choices, right?
It was,
but for many years. But you've done very well, haven't you?
I have over this past, year, I've got a little thing going. Yeah, it's working.
Well, over the past several years. Is betting on sports as good of a hedge as betting in the stock market?
Well, it's... You'd have to ask my classmate Fred Dent,
what Fred's answer would be.
But you're betting on outcomes, and if you can predict
the
outcomes.
I can't believe this. Tesla's up another 8% today. Betting on Tesla, that's in a week. It's gained about 33%.
Well, I think the market's closed today, though. No, is it open today?
You're right.
It was probably
346.
It was probably up
8% on Friday. You're right. It is closed on Veterans
Day. Don't bet against Tesla.
Okay, don't bet against Elon. Or Leon is the... We're back. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Robin Dow producing, and I'm going to turn the page. James in Metairie, he says the market is trading today. So Tesla, which... has been roaring since Donald Trump was elected. And, of course, Elon Musk, the richest man in the world, is getting richer. He's very tight with the next president of the United States. But at last report, up 8% again today. Tesla now trading at 246. That's about 100 points higher than it was last Tuesday. 877-217-5757. In studio for his first appearance, I believe, certainly as the CEO of the Arts Council of Greater Baton Rouge, is Jonathan Grimes, and John Kaufman, who's been involved in artistic endeavors at the Manship Theater and in other places. They are here to talk about what's happening with the Arts Council. And speaking of the Manship Theater, the Arts Council, of course, has many of its events there. And there is big news involving the River City Jazz Masters. How many years has that been going, Jonathan?
This will be our 18th year.
And you've been there, I guess, almost from the start, right?
Almost from the start, yeah. I started in 2007, and I'm just so happy that it's still continuing, and we still get to produce really, really good quality jazz in our city.
Well, tell us a bit about your background for those unfamiliar. We had, of course, Renee Chatelaine. I've had every member, every person who's headed the Arts Council, but you you've got a great entity in our community. And, of course, I remember when I was station manager at WRKF, we used to get some funding from the arts authorities. Mm-hmm. And now, as we know, funding is tight for nonprofits. But you're involved with every artistic entity in this community, aren't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, I started at the Arts Council in 2007. I'm by trade a musician. Both my parents taught at LSU for 34 years at the School of Music. So music is in my blood. And when I got the job at the Arts Council as the events manager, I got to work with such, you know, talented artists from all over the world. And I said, man, this is a really great spot. I kind of like it here. And so through Derek Gordon was the original one that hired me. And then after he passed, Eric Hollowaz was there. And then Renee Chatelain, I worked under Renee for 8 years, and she's a great mentor. And mm-hmm. being in the old Bogan Fire Museum, and now moving over to the Cary Siraj Community Arts Center, it's just that's a great place.
Yeah, you've got a great venue.
And, it really is.
And I'm glad you mentioned Derek Gordon. He's the one who got these big jazz people. He mm-hmm. of course had been at the Lincoln Center,
right,
and at the Kennedy Center.
Yeah.
And people like Kurt Elling, they've graced the stage, and you've got a big one this week.
We do, yeah. Jasmia Horn, back in 2021, I believe, we tried to get her, and that's when we were dealing with COVID. And so, you know, 3 years later, full circle, she'll be here on Wednesday. And we just found out that she's got some really talented New Orleans jazz artists coming with her, Herlin Riley, Roland Guerin, and Oscar Rossignoli. So that's going to have a nice New Orleans flair to it.
And John Kaufman is with you. And John, I know you, back in the day, you scheduled a lot of people at the Manship Theater, and the people Jonathan mentioned, they're really well-renowned for good reason in their world of jazz. I know Zia Tamami is really excited, but tell us, let's start with Jasmia Horn. That's Wednesday night, right?
That's Wednesday night. And she'll actually be in town tomorrow doing educational outreach as well, which is part of the River City Jazz Masters program, is to do a little bit of outreach as well while they're in town.
And the show time is?
7:30.
And how many seats?
325.
You know that number pretty well.
I do.
Yeah.
325, good ones.
And a listener, this is Steve downtown, says, John got a lot of people, including Chris Christopherson. He was here, what, 2018?
I believe so, for two nights. Yep.
For two nights.
Two nights.
And people said, I didn't see the shows, but people said that for those who had claimed that he was not with it, he put on pretty good shows, didn't he?
He put on great shows. He was Chris. I mean, he's an icon.
But people, there were rumors that he didn't know his name, but he knew, you know, he knew me and Bobby McGee, didn't he?
He knew that, and everybody there knew who he was.
Well, Jasmia Horn, that's a name that in the jazz world is heady stuff.
Yeah.
Tell us a bit about her.
So Jasmia, she's won the Thelonious Monk Institute competition, and also winner of the Sarah Vaughan competition. I might be misspeaking, but I'm pretty sure that's what it is. Kind of a new age jazz. She reminds me, there's another artist that was just recently in Baton Rouge, Samara Joy, who has that kind of Billie Holiday vibe to her. So it's nice to see that young people are carrying on the jazz tradition.
Well, Robin Dow has pulled up the great Jasmia Horn, who is one of the best, and she will be in our community in two nights. So here she is.
One, two, ah. Free your mind and let your thoughts expand. Take your time only on your command. Let your thoughts expand. Love you can unwind, let to your promised land. Don't hold on to hatred, that can be a heavy load. You can be free, lift it, take you where you wanna go. The pursuit of happiness. Your thoughts expand. Freedom's a life inside, child, woman, and man. Just free your mind and let your thoughts expand. Go on and take your time.
Not bad.
Yeah, she's great.
Pretty good pipes.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, she's great. She's married to a trumpeter, too, isn't she? I'm pretty sure she is.
I don't know,
yeah,
but
yeah. So, as you can imagine, a lot of these people in that line of work, they hang out together, and sometimes relationships bloom. But she will be in our community, and where will she be tomorrow? A listener,
Manship Theater on Wednesday
night. Well, I know she'll be there Wednesday night.
I'm sorry.
Night,
so she'll be at an elementary school tomorrow doing an educational outreach with her band and with the choir department.
All right. So yeah. Manship Theater Wednesday night.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll be 7:30.
Yes, sir.
And John, I think there's some places open.
There are some places too. And also, I want to mention, go back to the Arts Council website too. There are three more in the River City Jazz Message.
Who
series.
You want to talk about some of those that are?
Yeah.
In the offing.
So on February the 20th, we'll have Emmett Cohen, who's a wonderful pianist. He was bringing his trio. And Jim, you mentioned Kurt Elling earlier. On March 19th, we're bringing the Yellow Jackets featuring Kurt Elling. So you'll make sure you go to that show, because that's going to be a really great one. And then closing out the series on May the 1st will be Sammy Figueroa. We always try to do a heavy, you know, intense Latin jazz show to close out the series. So that'll be on May 1st.
Well, it's an exceptional group coming this way. And the Jazz Masters series was formed by one Derek Gordon, and he used to bring Debbie Allen to town once a year. We need to get her back.
I would love to.
Yeah.
And really, Derek started in partnership with the River City Jazz Coalition, and Zia, as you mentioned earlier, is part of that jazz coalition. So it's really a culmination of jazz lovers that decide this is who we should bring, and this is who the city will respond well to.
And Zia has the longest-running jazz show in America, mm-hmm. on radio, 47 years on KLSU, which used to be WLSU, which used to be WPRG, but he's been doing it since 1977. Spontaneous Combustion, and when you hear his show, it opens with Killer Joe from Quincy Jones,
right.
Who died last week. But Quincy is not the only big name in jazz. There are a lot of others, and those who are aficionados say the one you have this week, Jasmine Horn, is really one that is exceptional and commands the stage with her voice and her presence. So congratulations, and I know you've been doing this a long time. A listener asked, I think, a good question. I think we've talked about this with John before, but with 325 seats, it's an intimate setting, and it makes it even better for those who are there, but it makes it harder to get really big names because mm-hmm. you're not going to get a big gate
right.
unless you charge $10,000
a ticket. Right.
So how is that a challenge?
I mean, it's a challenge, but it's also, I mean, this series would not be possible without our sponsors and the sponsors that have continued to support this show. I mean, the series and everything that we do at the Arts Council and really Manship Theater as well. That's what makes that venue possible in terms of artist fee and also being inclusive and mm-hmm. getting people into the venue.
I assume Jasmine will be staying somewhere close to the venue.
She will.
Yeah. Well, years ago when I was station manager at WRKF, we had Randy Newman mm-hmm. who came. He did it for $20,000, by the way.
Wow. That's a good deal.
That's a good deal. Yeah, he did it. And he came in, but he insisted that he have a limo drive to the arena. And he was staying at the Hilton across the street. So the limo driver shows up and drives him about 20 feet. And then about 2 hours after the show, I get a call from a limo driver in a panic. He never came back. I'm sure
he just walked
across the street to his hotel room. But that gave me an indication, these stars, that he had to have a certain soft drink, a certain beer. He had to have the pretzels of a certain kind.
Yep.
You know, when you're living large. But 20,000 today?
That's a great deal.
That's a great deal.
Good luck.
That was even a good deal. That was even a good deal in 2006.
Yeah, absolutely.
But he broke his hand too, and it had to be delayed. So actually, he appeared after I'd left as station manager. But he filled the house, and he did some songs that he can't sing anymore. Mm-hmm. We're in a new world, but he did it. I remember he said, "Standard Oilman ain't going to run this state. It's going to be run by little folks like you and me." And he goes, "Yeah, right. I know where I am." Until tomorrow. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and stay tuned.